Hello, and welcome to the Ask Mom RN Show. Each week, Mom RN and her expert guests share practical advice for raising a happy, healthy family. Now, here's your host of the Ask Mom RN Show, Tamara Walker.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today is Monday, December 21st, 2015. It is only 4 days until Christmas. It is Christmas week, and we want to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and hope that you are doing well and having a great time this Christmas season. We have a great show planned for today, and we're going to jump right into it. Talking about Christmas, you know, we're always thinking about gifts that we want to give and maybe gifts that you hope to get. But one gift that you do not want to give or receive is the flu. Unfortunately, along with the winter season and the holiday season comes the flu season. And I know that we've talked about it many times here on the show. But did you know that a lot of people still try to go to work or send their kids to school when they're sick and exhibiting symptoms? And unfortunately, then it spreads like wildfire. So we're going to talk a little bit about flu etiquette today with Lizzie Post, who is the great-great-granddaughter of etiquette guru Emily Post. And Lizzie's also the co-author of Emily Post's Etiquette 18th Edition. And joining Lizzie is Dr. William Schaffner, who is the medical director for the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. And they're going to talk a little bit about flu etiquette and a survey that was done about flu perceptions and flu awareness. So let's talk with Lizzie and Dr. Schaffner.
Hi, Tamara.
Hi, Tamara.
Hello. Welcome to the Ask Mom RN Show.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, thank you both for being with us. And I understand that you have some survey results from a survey about Americans' perceptions about flu and flu etiquette. Could you tell us a little bit about what those results are?
Sure. Sorry. One of the most interesting things from the results that I was curious about was that almost twice as many adults will bring their child to a healthcare professional when their child is sick, but they won't actually go themselves when they're experiencing flu-like symptoms. And I thought that was really interesting, and we really want to talk today about making sure that people are considerate about not only the children that they care for, but themselves, and taking themselves to see that healthcare professional.
Absolutely, because that healthcare professional might prescribe them a medication that makes them get better sooner and will make it so that they won't transmit the virus to others as readily.
And Tamara, one of the funny things about it too was that adults were just assuming that automatically the flu will pass through their household if their children have it. And by getting and by taking those preventative measures and by going to see your healthcare professional, you might not act in your house. It doesn't have to go through everybody who lives in the house.
Exactly.
And that's very true. With the medications you mentioned, you know, such as antivirals, it's important that those be prescribed very quickly once symptoms start to show. And they can prevent other members of the household from getting the flu.
Yeah, that's very important. You know, we start with the fact that influenza vaccine should be given to everyone. Everyone older than 6 months of age in the United States should get vaccinated each and every year. That protects not only themselves, but those around them. And then if you add on the etiquette, namely washing your hands frequently, avoiding people who are coughing and sneezing, and then should you get sick, go to that healthcare professional because a medication might be available to you, and that will help shorten the course of your illness and prevent transmission to people around you. And nobody wants to be a spreader, do they?
No,
especially in
they
this holiday
don't.
Season.
It's the worst gift to be giving this time of year.
Absolutely. And all too often, people do either go to work when they're sick because they feel that they have to. A little bit too. Why we need to make sure to stay home and not be spreading these flu germs.
Well, as you've just said, that's the exact reason. In order to not spread the flu germs, the best thing to do when you are feeling those symptoms, and when it comes to the flu, you can use the acronym FACTS to think about what your symptoms are. If you have a fever, aches, chills, tiredness, or sudden onset, that's a pretty good indicator that you need to get yourself to a healthcare professional. But you really do want to make sure that you stay home. It's okay. A lot of people are nervous. They feel, oh, I only see these relatives a couple of times a year. Oh, I really need to go to that work function. It really is best to say, I'm terribly sorry, I have the flu, I need to stay home.
That's the best thing to do in order to prevent the spread of this virus. Nobody wants to spread the virus to others.
Absolutely. And of course, you mentioned, you know, getting the flu shot to prevent the flu and good hand washing, staying in, not exposing others. What are some other measures if someone does start showing symptoms of the flu and they think that they have it? What are some other things they need to do?
Well, Tamara, it's very important that they go contact their healthcare professional as quickly as possible, because the prescription medications, they all work best if given very early after the onset of the illness. And that will shorten the duration of the illness, make people feel better, and so they won't transmit it to other people. And part of the trick is that we don't want to spread flu throughout our communities, through our workplace, people going to the gym, and it's nobody wants a flu Christmas, right?
Absolutely. Well, could you tell us a little bit about the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Take 3 approach to controlling flu transmission?
Well, as we've been saying, Tamara, the takes and older ought to get vaccinated each and every year. Number two, those good etiquette things, washing your hands, avoiding coughing and sneezing. And if you do cough and sneeze, do it down into your elbow. Don't broadcast it about. And then the third thing is, if you do happen to get sick, go to that healthcare professional very quickly, because there may be prescription medications that will make you get better sooner. And who doesn't want to get better sooner?
Absolutely. I understand there's some free resources available for parents to teach their children about the flu.
Oh,
can you tell us about those and where we can find those resources?
They are so wonderful. They have this fabulous coloring book for kids that really helps to educate about the flu and about preventing the spread of the flu. It's a fabulous way to get your kids involved. And in the very back, they've got great tips for parents. And that can be found at the nfid.org.
And you can also go to flufacts.com to get more information about influenza and how to prevent this illness.
Well, Dr. Schaffner and Lizzie, thank you so much for being with us and providing this great information today.
Thank you so much.
Good to be with you.
In addition to the flu, we also need to be concerned about whooping cough. And a lot of times, parents or grandparents may not be aware that they might need a whooping cough booster shot, and that they could potentially expose young children and especially newborns in their families to this illness, which could be very severe. Unfortunately, when a newborn gets this, it can be very, very serious, can lead to a lot of complications and even be fatal. So here to talk with us not only about whooping cough, but also some more about the flu and the flu vaccine and whooping cough vaccines is Dr. Leonard Friedland, who is the VP and Director of Scientific Affairs and Public Health Vaccines North America at GSK. And he's, like I said, going to tell us a little bit about these vaccines and why they're important information that we need to know, not only about the flu, but about whooping cough as well. Hello, Dr.
Hello.
Friedland. Welcome to the Ask Mom RN show.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us. Dr. Friedland, of course, it is the flu season, and many times when people get a respiratory illness, they may be confused as to whether they have the flu or if they have a bad cold or some other respiratory infection. Could we start out by talking about the flu and the symptoms that people can expect with it?
Absolutely. So flu is not your common cold. You know, your common cold is an illness that really but you don't feel good, it doesn't really stop you from doing things. I mean, you shouldn't be going to work, you shouldn't be going to school if you have a cold, because you don't want to be spreading what you have. But you can still pretty much go about what you were doing. With flu, and also the cold kind of comes on over a couple of days. With flu, very different. People can often date almost by the hour and the date that they actually started with their flu illness. And it comes on rapidly, and they get sick fast. High fever, shakes, chills, not feeling well, and they can't get out of bed. They can't go to work. They can't go to school. They can't care for their kids or their elders. And it can be very serious illness. In any given year, hundreds of thousands of hospitalizations from influenza. In some years, 30,000 or more deaths from influenza. Last year, there were 147 children under the age of 5 who died from influenza. And so very different illness comes on very fast and can be very severe. And vaccination is our most effective tool to prevent influenza.
And influenza is extremely important for people to know that they do need to go and get treated right away if they can, to hopefully prevent complications and to hopefully shorten the severity and the duration of the illness. Dr. Friedland, with whooping cough, many people may not be familiar with what the symptoms are of whooping cough and why do people need to be concerned about getting whooping cough?
Yeah, so whooping cough is caused by a bacteria. And whooping cough is an illness that will start as something that looks like your common cold, low-grade fever, some coughing, maybe some runny nose. But it doesn't go away. And after 2 weeks, they sort of enter into a second phase. But in those first 2 weeks when they think they just have a common cold, they are highly contagious and can be spreading to vulnerable people around them, the bacterium. Now, after those first 2 weeks, they enter into a phase of severe coughing. And the coughing can go on for months, 3 months, if not longer. And when they have these coughing episodes, which can occur all day long and all night long, unrelenting for a prolonged period of time, after these severe episodes of coughing, they're hungry for air, and they'll take a deep breath in, and that's the whoop. So they have these coughing episodes, and then they take a deep breath in. And when this happens, it's very problematic. The coughing episodes can be so severe, people can break their ribs from the coughing.
Mm.
And there are other complications that can occur as well, such as pneumonia. But very debilitating, and it just doesn't stop. It can go on for months. But when those first 2 weeks in particular, when they're spreading and it's contagious and they're spreading, vulnerable people around them can get whooping cough, what we also call it pertussis, and we're really concerned about the young baby, particularly the baby in the first few months of life before they've had the chance to get the infant vaccines to protect against pertussis. And when an infant gets pertussis, it can be very severe. After the coughing episodes, they can actually stop breathing. And one in two babies with whooping cough will end up being hospitalized because it's so severe. And sadly, one in 100 can die from the illness. And so we're really, our major concern is not only ourselves as adults with pertussis or whooping cough, but spreading it to these young babies. And so because of that, the Centers for Disease Control recommends pertussis or whooping cough vaccination for all adolescents and adults is a one-time vaccine. They also recommend vaccination for pregnant women to protect their newborn child.
And you mentioned, of course, the pertussis vaccine. A lot of people mistakenly think that if they had the vaccine when they were a child, that they are protected for life. And many may not realize they may need a booster.
Right. So there is there has been a pertussis vaccination recommended for infants and children for many, many years. In fact, right now, it's a series of 5 vaccinations starting at 2 months of age and concluding at 4 to 6 years of age when children enter kindergarten. But you're absolutely right. The recommendation is then when you reach adolescence or if you're older now that you're an adult, you get a booster. We call it a Tdap vaccine. It's pertussis combined with tetanus and diphtheria. And that's a one-time dose. So you're absolutely right. Adolescents and adults should get the vaccination, even if they were vaccinated as young infants.
And Dr. Friedland, you mentioned, of course, the flu vaccine as well. If somebody needs both the flu vaccine and mm-hmm. they need the pertussis vaccine, can they get those at the same time, or should they space out?
Yes, they can get those at the same time. So, of course, influenza vaccine is yearly, and we're entering into flu season now. So if you haven't been vaccinated, you should go ahead and get that vaccine, your flu vaccine. And at the same time, ask about whooping cough vaccine. If you haven't had that, you can get it as well at the same time, at the same visit. And that's really important because while whooping cough vaccine can be given at any point during the year, if people are going to go into their doctor's office or the pharmacist to get their flu vaccine, they can get the pertussis, the whooping cough vaccine, at the same time. Now, we recognize that there's a lot of need for increased awareness and education around this topic, particularly around whooping cough. And so at GSK Vaccines, where I do my vaccine research, we've partnered with Every Child by Two, a great organization, to create a nationwide campaign to raise awareness. And as part of that, we've created a website, which is vaccinateyourfamily.org. And on vaccinateyourfamily.org is disease awareness information about the vaccines that they can be given at the same time, where the vaccines can be found at doctors and pharmacists, et cetera, and also a toolkit, particularly for parents and for grandparents, that they can use to educate themselves, to bring questions to their doctor, to ask about the diseases and the vaccines and become more knowledgeable. Because when people understand what the risks are, not only to themselves, but for spreading this to young infants, they want to take action and become knowledgeable and protect themselves through vaccination. So vaccinateyourfamily.org is a resource that we've created that I think your listeners would be very interested in accessing.
Absolutely, and we encourage them to visit that site and to get the resources there. Well, Dr. Friedland, is there anywhere else we should go for information? Anything else that you want to add to what we've discussed today?
So in addition to vaccinateyourfamily.org, there's a website at healthmap.org, and there's a link to that at vaccinateyourfamily.org. But at healthmap.org, there's a way to enter in your zip code to see what pharmacies in your area are carrying the influenza vaccines and the whooping cough vaccines along with other vaccines. So healthmap.org is great, along with vaccinateyourfamily.org. And then another really excellent resource is the Centers for Disease Control at cdc.gov. Fantastic information there about whooping cough, influenza. And there's a link to the cdc.gov also at vaccinateyourfamily.org.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing this important information with us today.
Thank you.
Many times when we think about arthritis, we think about it being something that strikes older people or the elderly. But unfortunately, there is juvenile arthritis, which can be very painful, can be very much a difficult disease to treat and condition that children are affected by. And we have some information from Dr. Derek Todd, who is a rheumatologist, and he is also the director of the Brigham and Women's Rheumatology Musculoskeletal Ultrasound Center in Boston, Massachusetts. And Dr. Todd wanted to share some important information about juvenile idiopathic arthritis for us.
So, Dr. Todd, what is JIA and how many types of JIA are there?
JIA stands for juvenile idiopathic arthritis. And this is a chronic arthritis that affects kids, and we don't often think of that happening, but it does. Idiopathic means a condition of unknown cause, which can be scary for patients and for families.
PJIA and SJIA, what is the difference between these two conditions?
Well, PJIA stands for polyarticular JIA, which is a condition that affects many different joints in the body. It's most similar to adult rheumatoid arthritis, which the audience may be aware of. It can cause pain, swelling, and stiffness, so that kids can no longer be in athletics and miss school. SJIA is a systemic JIA in which there's inflammation causing not just joint pain and swelling, but also fevers, rashes, and patients are often quite sick. This is the most severe type. They can be hospitalized, and in rare, sad cases, it can be fatal.
And is there a single medicine that is FDA approved to treat both PGIA and SGIA?
There is. Actemra is a treatment that is FDA approved for both conditions. There are other biologic drugs that can treat either of the subsets. And in fact, there are many medicines that we use off-label to treat these things. Not every medication can go through the rigors of a clinical trial in children. But it's important to remember that these treatments are all prescription medications, and it's the doctor in conjunction with the family that determines the best treatment for the child.
Now, with this FDA-approved drug, was this treatment specifically developed for children?
Well, it was first pioneered in adult rheumatoid arthritis, and after success there, it was developed for juvenile disease. And that's not unusual. It's hard to do a clinical trial in children, and therefore, drugs are often approved in adults first and expanded into the juvenile world.
And if parents are concerned and need more information, where can viewers go for more information?
I would encourage them first to talk to their doctor, who might refer them to a rheumatology specialist. But if parents or even adolescent folks are interested in learning more about this, they can go to a couple good websites. The Arthritis Foundation has kidsgetarthritis2.org, and the Arthritis Foundation has rheumatology.org, both of which are informative and safe sites to go to because there's a lot of misinformation about these rare conditions.
Thank you for your time, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS, is something that almost 35 million adult Americans suffer from, and it can cause recurring abdominal pain and constipation or diarrhea, and it can significantly impact daily life at home and at work and in school. And many times people may suffer for years without being properly diagnosed. According to a new national survey, IBS in America, patients with IBS said that their symptoms are so bothersome that they would sacrifice caffeine or their cell phone or their internet or even sex for 1 month for the chance to feel 1 month of relief. So this is something that affects a lot of people, and the American Gastroenterological Association just released the results from the IBS in America Comprehensive Survey, and they polled more than 3,200 IBS sufferers and 300 physicians in an effort to better understand this condition. Well, we have Dr. Anthony Limbo here to talk about the findings of the survey and also what the symptoms are of IBS and how you can talk with your doctor if you feel that you may have IBS if you're trying to get a diagnosis. So here is Dr. Anthony Limbo.
Hi, Tamara. It's Tony.
Hi, Dr. Limbo.
Limbo.
Welcome to the Ask Mom RN show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. Dr. Limbo, would you tell us about the results from the IBS in America survey?
Sure. So this is a nationwide survey that included over 3,000 individuals experiencing IBS symptoms. And IBS symptoms are a chronic intermittent condition that's associated with abdominal pain and alteration of bowel habits, either constipation or diarrhea, and in some cases, even both. And so what we found in the survey was that these symptoms can have a significant impact on patients' quality of life. We found that it impacts their day-to-day activity on average about 9 days per month, and in those people that have an impact on those days, they miss work or school up to 2 days per month. Patients were often reported being very frustrated by their symptoms, and that they waited up to 1 year. Two-thirds of people waited up to 1 year, and some people waited up to a decade before seeking advice. We also found that people tried a number of different over-the-counter medications. On average, it was about three prior to seeking advice from a physician, and that most people were not very satisfied with those treatments. So what we recommend from the survey is that we found in our conclusions is that people should speak up early, completely, and often to their physician about their symptoms so that they may make the correct diagnosis and start on the appropriate treatment for their IBS.
So it sounds like from the results of the survey that IBS definitely can have a huge impact on an individual's life.
Yeah, that's correct. It can affect their day-to-day activity because a lot of people aren't able to predict when symptoms are going to occur. So we found that about 20% of people had no idea when they would be experiencing the symptoms, and on average they experienced between 2 and 3 days per week of symptoms. And you can imagine if you're having these type of symptoms on a regular basis, that it can really impact your ability to function. It can also limit your ability to socialize. People often can be afraid to socialize or go out to events that they even find very enjoyable because they're concerned about developing these type of symptoms, or they're concerned that they won't be able to find a bathroom in time. So it really can have a negative impact. We really encourage people to speak up about it, talk to their clinicians, their doctors about their symptoms, and make sure they start treatment if it's appropriate.
And how can they talk with their doctor? What should they ask? What information should they share with the doctor in order to get a proper diagnosis?
Yeah, so one of the things we found was that people were often reluctant to talk about their bowels. We found in the survey that people were felt more comfortable talking about sexually transmitted diseases than they did talking about their bowels. So the first step is for people to start the conversation, talk about the type of bowel habits that they're having, but not only to say that they're having diarrhea or constipation if they're experiencing those symptoms, but really to discuss the impact that these symptoms are having on their day-to-day life. Let their doctor know that if it is significantly impacting their life, let their doctor know that so they can make start the appropriate treatment for that for you.
And you mentioned, of course, constipation and diarrhea. What are some other symptoms that go along with IBS?
Yeah, so abdominal pain is the most common of the symptoms, and it's usually the abdominal pain is linked to the change in bowel habits. In other words, people oftentimes will experience pain either before or after having a bowel movement. The pain is often crampy. Another very common symptom that can be debilitating is bloating. People, particularly women, often experience bloating, sometimes even with abdominal distension, but more often it's the sensation of bloating.
And what types of treatments are available for people who are diagnosed with IBS?
So it is individualized because the presentation or the symptoms can vary from person to person. And what we found in the survey was that people are getting advice from family and friends and often following that advice, and it may not always be appropriate. Again, that's where your physician comes should be the one that's guiding you as an appropriate treatment. And the treatment spans from anywhere from lifestyle modifications. This would include things like changes to the diet. One of the things that's been found is that poorly absorbed sugars can sometimes trigger symptoms of IBS, not always the cause of it, but can trigger it, and there may be ways to reduce those. And again, your doctor can help direct you there. Other lifestyle modifications, including reducing stress, improving sleep, getting regular exercise, can all be important. And there are treatments available as well. A number of over-the-counter treatments, which can be initiated, and there are even prescription drugs that are available that have been shown to be effective reducing symptoms. And then there are other treatments, such as psychological treatments, stress reduction, cognitive behavioral therapy can help reduce the symptoms in people that are refractory to treatments.
Dr. Limbo, thank you for providing this information about IBS and the new survey. Could you tell us where we can learn more information?
Yeah, so the results of the survey are on the website ibsinamerica.gastro.org. That website also has links to other websites that has additional information on IBS. So I encourage people to look at that, ibsinamerica.castro.org.
Dr. Limbo, thank you again for being with us today.
Great. Thank you for having me.
As 2015 is coming to a close here in another week and a half, many of us are already thinking about 2016 and possibly planning a trip or a vacation for next year. A new survey commissioned by Choice Hotels reveals what Americans are planning when it comes to travel next year. And we have travel expert Kendra Thornton returning to the show to talk about some travel trends for 2016, what the travel forecast for next year is. So let's welcome Kendra to the show.
Hi, Kendra. Welcome back to the Ask Mom RN show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, Kendra, you are always going to such great, cool locations. Where are you today?
Today I am in Aspen, Colorado, another great, cool destination. It's beautiful here.
Very fun. Kendra, I understand that there is a new survey on American travel trends. Can you tell us what the findings were from this survey?
Absolutely. Well, I have to mention that it's snowing outside, but I'm cozy by the fireplace. I'm at the Ascend Hotel collection called the Innsbruck, and it's really fun to talk about new travel trends for the new year because very interesting findings. One I got a kick out of was that people would give up chocolate in exchange for free hotel nights.
Oh, wow. That's amazing because I'm a big chocolate fan, but I think I would probably give it up for a free hotel night.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Well, Kendra, you mentioned the location you're at. It sounds really fun. Are more travelers kind of going towards destinations that let them unplug and get away from everything? Because, you know, a lot of people take their technology with them and they end up working part of their vacation. How do we just get away and unplug?
Yes, absolutely. This survey was conducted by Choice Hotels and actually found that over a third of Americans would prefer to take a totally technology-free vacation somewhere in the new year. And that's one of the reasons why we're here in Colorado, because this is a great destination for people who want to have a fun and active, wonderful vacation without all the devices. I mean, if you think about it, when you're skiing the slopes in the wintertime here, you're certainly not going to be pulling out your cell phone. And if you come in the summer, there's river rafting and hiking and mountain biking. There's so much to do, again, away from the technology. So I love that people want to really, truly unplug on their vacations and that this is something more and more people are interested in.
And according to the survey, more people are interested in if they're, you know, have some interesting opinions on if they're given the choice between a paid bonus at work or extra vacation time. Can you tell us a little bit about what the results were for that?
Yes, and this was surprising. The survey showed that about 65% of travelers would rather get an extra year-end bonus versus additional paid vacation time. Now, I completely disagree with the majority, but of course I'm biased. I work in travel. But I'd like to think that maybe they're using that extra money and applying it toward the vacations that they had already planned with their original vacation time and really doing those trips up extra special.
And Kendra, I'm reading something about leisure travel. What is leisure travel and what does that entail?
You know, leisure travel is the idea that you would add on a couple leisure travel days to the beginning or end of a business trip. And about a third of those Americans surveyed said they plan on taking a leisure trip in 2016. And if you think about it, it's a great economical way to travel because, of course, your flight is paid for by your work. So you just need to cover those extra hotel nights for your leisure piece. Or if you have a friend where you're traveling, then ideally you could have a completely free vacation.
My husband and I have each done that, and that is a great way, I think, to kind of blend the two. You know, have a business trip, but then you also have the vacation part and get to just have some fun in your destination.
I completely agree. That was me yesterday. I had my leisure day skiing the slopes in Aspen.
Kendra, where do you think some great destinations will be for next year, or do you see any travel trends for 2016 that you think are going to be popular?
Yeah, it's such a good question. The good news is we see more and more people wanting to travel and continuing to travel, and those numbers are going up, and that's a good thing. Americans want to explore not only our great nation, but international destinations as well. I think it's a lot of course, people like to get to the beach. People like to explore the urban markets. We're seeing increased interest in the national parks, which is really fun for families or, you know, just singles or anyone. Obviously, there's a lot to see just here in our beautiful country.
Well, Kendra, thanks so much for this great information. Where can we learn more?
People can go to choicehotels.com, and they can learn more about the survey and also just get some inspiration for trips they may want to take or plan for the new year.
Well, thanks so much, and happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you.
Are you still Christmas shopping for all those Christmas presents that you want to give your family and friends? Or have you just started? Some people are just now starting their gift shopping, which can be pretty stressful because we're coming down to the wire. Well, we have some great last-minute gift ideas from lifestyle expert and gifting guru Dana Holmes. She's an expert at finding the perfect presents at the right price, and she has some gift ideas to share with all of us.
Hi, thanks for having me, and I've partnered with some great brands to help you do just that. Right now at Office Depot and Office Max stores, they have some quality gifts at a great value, like this exclusive DeVoga fashion collection, Merry and Bright and Cozy Cabin. It has everything from notebooks to tablet sleeves, and they're designed with wintry colors and cozy patterns that are fun to get and give, and they're 25% off. They're part of the Coworker Collection, which is the perfect dose of snarky wit and a fitting gift for your colleagues. You can visit Office Depot or Office Max stores, but you can also go to officedepot.com/holiday for some really great gift ideas. Now, you might be surprised to hear this, but 62% of shoppers want gift cards this holiday season, and Red Lobster is there to help you out with a gift for you and a gift for them with their Give a Gift, Get a Gift campaign that's happening right now. For every $50 that you spend on gift cards, you get a coupon that is good for one free appetizer or $10 off. So whether it's their Cheddar Bay biscuits or their new, bigger, and better shrimp dinners, Red Lobster is a great place to celebrate the season with your family and friends. Now, for the guys on your list, get them something practical, but they also like to look good. So check this out. It's the Gillette Shave Club. It'll keep him well-groomed all year long. It starts at less than $50 for the whole year, and he can customize his subscription for his favorite cartridges, handles, and the frequency of delivery, so he can get that great Gillette shave at a value that's less than a lot of the other trendy shave clubs out there. And for the people on your list who are always on the go, they need to stay connected, and so you can get a great bang for your buck this holiday season with Cricket Wireless's affordable pricing. Right here is the Samsung Galaxy Grand Prime smartphone. It's just $29.99 after a $70 in-store rebate just for bringing your number to Cricket. It's a premium brand without the premium price. And also for the commuters and the other busy people on your list who are always on the go, they can grab and go this amazing coffee travel mug. It's the Contigo Auto Seal Metro Travel Mug. It is spill-proof. It keeps liquids hot for up to 5 hours with the Thermalock technology. And my favorite thing about it is the CleanGuard lid that rotates to keep the spout clean and germ-free on all of your travels. It's the perfect gift for the busy person. It's just $24.99 at gocontigo.com, and it makes a perfect stocking stuffer. For more information on these and other great gift ideas, visit metromomclub.com.
And we want to thank Dana Holmes for those great gift ideas. Well, that is our show for today, except for we have one big announcement to make. If you'll remember last week's show, we talked with Limor Suss, who gave us some great holiday gift ideas as well. And we offered a $75 JCPenney gift card giveaway over on momrn.com. Well, we just announced our winner this morning on the blog.
but we're going to tell you now that it was Kathy Ralston, and Kathy's been notified, and I've already heard from her and received her contact information back. So congratulations, Kathy. Hope that that will help you with your holiday gift shopping and make the holidays a little brighter. Thanks to everybody who entered. And for all of you listening, we want to wish you a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and a joyous, happy, blessed New Year. This is going to be our last show for 2015. We're going to take a few weeks off and just take a little hiatus, and we'll be back later in end of January, beginning of February. We'll let you know. You can always find out on our Facebook page what we're up to. Go to facebook.com/AskMomRNShow, or just search for Ask Mom RN Show and our page will come up. On Twitter, it's @MomRN. Over on YouTube, you can search for Mom RN or Ask Mom RN Show. And of course, you can visit us at MomRN.com. We would love to connect with you. We'd love to hear from you. Tell us what you want to hear in 2016. We are excited about the new year, looking forward to it, and all we'll be doing next year. I hope that you have a wonderful, great time with your family and friends for the rest of 2015, and enjoy celebrating, ringing in the new year, and be safe. Want everybody to make it into the new year healthy and happy and well. So again, thanks for listening. Merry Christmas, and we will see you next year.